Welcome to the Modern Marketing Podcast, where we explore cutting-edge approaches to solving common marketing challenges. This podcast is brought to you by the Agile Marketing Alliance so that we can learn, share, and grow together. I'm Jim Yule, and Melissa Reeve and I will be your hosts for today's episode.
Today, we have the pleasure of speaking with Tom Dietrich, who was a lead enterprise Agile coach at Target Retail Stores. Today, Tom shares the story about how he has helped a variety of marketing teams gain speed and efficiency while eliminating low-value work. Welcome to the show, Tom.
Wow, thanks for the introduction. I love telling these stories, so we can get right on it.
Well, I'm looking forward to it. So, Tom, tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got involved helping marketing teams.
Well, I'd like to start out by saying I was drafted. I got drafted from being a scrum master into a coach by casually mentioning to my boss that I'd work for him sometime. I'd like to do that rather than an engineering manager. It just seemed to make more sense. And he must remember that because he drafted me. The second drafting I got was like, okay, you're a coach. You need a territory. You need some places to work. I didn't have to wait too long. And one of my friends who was a scrum master in, let's say, the engineering side of marketing was getting pulled into coaching business teams. Okay. And she said, hey, I'm scrum mastering three teams right now. Tom, can you take this one? And that's how it started again. So that was the pull.
Well, that's great. So you start engaging with the marketing teams. Can you tell us a little bit about those teams and then the types of problems that they were trying to solve?
I think it was the first director that approached me. And I kind of said, well, why do you want to do this? And he says, well, we're in it for the efficiency and effectiveness. And I thought, okay, we're going to hang on to that because all I can give you is the illusion of speed. I can't make your people work faster. Let's figure out what you don't have to do to get your work done. So that was a media team. This media team kind of exploded into six teams. This is like where all the people were, all the processes and all the revenue. You had asked what some of the known problems were. Rapid growth areas. Marketing is not here for yesterday. It's for tomorrow, right? In the largest group, what they needed to do was reduce campaign cycle time. Okay. If we eliminate the things that make us loop back, we can move forward faster. So those were like known problems. And it's fair to say that these are probably common among many teams, but this is what I experienced. You know, unmasked problems as we get to working with them. Areas of waste, roles and responsibilities, and then budgeting time for improvements. We're working so much on the things we need to do, we don't have the time to improve. So those are the teams, and those were the problem areas, known and unknown.
So where did you start? How did you go about tackling these problems? I mean, what did you do at first, and then what did you end up doing later? Tell us a little bit more about how you tackled the problems.
Well, a lot of it was being in the right place at the right time with the right curiosity from the right people. So let's say I had one of the teams in the dojo already. The CMO comes walking through our dojo and starts asking the team questions. He says, so why does a team want agility in the first place? And I had this kind of written on white hockey tape on the wall, embrace uncertainty. And I looked around for anything to say to this guy. I go, here's the deal. If you have, and I suspect marketing does, a need to embrace uncertainty, this is where you want to be. And he says, I see. So what kind of a weight is it to get my teams in here? I used to be in sales, kind of good at it, but I can recognize buy signals. So that's kind of what helped take this all off. In my mind, I'm thinking this is 6-2 pizza teams, right? You're familiar with that. No, yes. Bigger than that, you can feed with two pizzas. They had a different thing in mind. Each team was 5 teams. So we have 5 Kanban boards because it's this many different aspects of running the campaigns needing to work together. They want to understand each other better so they can understand why it takes a day and a half to get something back, how to get into each other's priority spaces.
Well, how did you help those teams get out of their silos? You know, this is a common problem in marketing, is that in order to produce a campaign, you have all the different skill sets, and typically they reside in their silos. How did you get them to collaborate and work with each other?
Well, I think the first big lift, I borrowed from Mike Kottmeyer, a leading Agile in Atlanta consulting company. I borrowed his trust and influence infinity loop. But I changed things around. He has it where you generate influence, then you build trust. That's probably good for your business. But for a team, I believe you build trust and then you generate influence from that, and it continues the loop. I'd asked what I thought was a rhetorical question, like, what's the most important thing you have in working together? Like in one of their retrospectives. And they said, speed. I said, okay, that didn't go where I thought it was going to go. So I hand drew this loop out with the 8 stages on there about gaining access, building empathy, creating a shared point of view, generating a safe environment to transact, go over to the other side of the loop where you're becoming an influencer, gain agency, integrity, delivering on the capability, and finally, the results that you'd all been talking about, and how we work on that loop. And you gain more access. The more times you go through that loop with people, the more access you gain and the more influential you become. And that just like sparked these folks. Okay. So in the dojos, we did hyper sprints for engineers of 2 to 3 day sprints. For business teams, I did 5 days because they weren't churning that much through. It's not like you're like changing code around. You're working through a process and helping to generate more efficiencies there. So we did weekly retros, and it was a 6-week dojo. And, you know, when it came time for the 5th week to plan their own exits, they didn't want to leave. Okay. Like they had brought their work into this cool space. No one's bothering them. They learn in the morning, apply the working in the regular meetings and stuff in the afternoons.
So Tom, thanks for sharing that. For listeners who may not be familiar with the dojo approach, can you share what that looked like? And then can you share how maybe that could look like in today's more remote and hybrid world?
All right. So let's start with the basics of what a dojo is. It's an immersive learning session of 6 weeks. I saw teams make it their home. So picture a very long like banquet table. Okay. Maybe it's two tables wide, with maybe 8 chairs on each side, okay, for a typical dojo. You're going to have maybe 5, 6, 7, 8 people in there and room for 12 to 14 with some room for bystanders, because you do want your stakeholders to drop in from time to time. You bring your work in. And so dojo, the place for self-reflection, a place for learning. I've heard several translations, but it's really an introspective time to like come and be and think. All right. So that's what we're trying to do, is provide that kind of a space where teams can form or reform by working more closely, openly conversing without distractions while still addressing their work and taking the time to learn. So in a normal course of a dojo, in the first week, we would do something called chartering, which is really getting to know ourselves. What are our goals? What's our elevator pitch? Who's in our community? Who are in our spheres? And how do they interrelate? How do we define our work? How do we even think about our work? If we're looking for how we can improve, let's look at the moving parts. Okay, so not quite the full-on value stream, but maybe it's a flow, maybe it's a process flow. And then let's talk about where those things are that can be adjusted. Where do we have opportunities to gain? We advance that more and more into like, how are we going to build trust? How can we sharpen our communication skills with each other? Once in a while, we have to tell our stories back to those that are paying us. Can we practice some storytelling experiences? So this is all work we get to do because we're not in a pod in this row, a cubicle in that row. Oh, this is people in the space. They have a space. They're working together. I've cleared whiteboards for them. The only other people on this floor besides you guys is other coaches and maybe other teams in other spaces. So it's really our learning working space. How we do that in hybrid is tough. It's really, really tough, especially if you don't have fixed hybrid like on-site days. Okay. If it takes longer time for a coach to observe the team when you're doing it through Zoom. Don't expect it to go any faster. It goes slower. And stickiness might not always be there because there's still that distance of you and the screen and the network. So we would take some of those segments that I mentioned in the dojo and do those in like 90 minutes to 2 hour sessions with those teams and tried to make it work that way.
Tom, in our conversation before the show, we talked a little bit about the importance of creating a continuous dialogue between engineering, marketing, product, and the stakeholders. How did you get them to talk to each other? I mean, these functions have sort of natural gaps, and how did you get them to work with each other?
I always like to start out with a conversation, and this kind of quiets the room when I ask this. What is most important here? And let's surface that. Let's pull those perspectives. Let's pull them together and see where we have themes. Okay? How do we prioritize the work? I think is really what this comes down to. What are the most important things we need for deliver the best value, or in some case, the best sustainability for a product in a time frame? Right. So it's open conversations. And I think, Jim, what you might be referring to is this pyramid of perspective, maybe from Sarah Singer Noir. Picture this pyramid. On the bottom layer, it's the why, your purpose. Okay. When I talk about align on what's the most important thing, that is worth some considerable discussion. Collectively, what is most important to us? Above that layer, there's four layers, so bear with me here, is the what. What are the things that help us get to that purpose? Then there's the how layer, and I generally include other stakeholders on the receiving end of that, because I heard this, and I've never forgotten it since. If I knew how you were going to do this, I would have changed what I wanted. And then finally, the when. When the when is most important, the what and the how have to be reconsidered. If we're reducing the timetable, here's what I can get you. Okay. But if you ever have to change your why, you're starting over. Continuous alignment on all four of those, but you can really only negotiate the when, how, and what.
That's a great bit of wisdom. If I knew how you were going to do this, I would have changed what I wanted. So now let's shift gears a little bit and let's talk about how you used OKRs with your marketing teams.
I'm going to start talking about OKRs by assuring everybody I have stolen from the best on this. Felipe Castro, Christina Watke in her book Radical Focus, and then Margot Georgiadis, who really doesn't do the public tour so much, but I did was able to observe a live interview with her once. She was former vice president of the Americas, or president of the Americas for Google, right? And they know a thing about OKRs. So OKRs can be this real daunting thing, or you can simplify them, but I'm gonna jump in with what Felipe says. They're not complicated, they're just hard, okay? Because essentially you're going through the why question five times every time. OKRs are a powerful tool. They do take a bit of time. I'll generally spend 60 minutes explaining them and then maybe an hour and a half to get people through a draft. Do the KR first. That's a Felipe thing. That assures you're getting the most meaningful, important thing that you want. Move the O part, the objective, into this inspiring thing that jumps you out of bed that says, I can't wait to get up and coach today. Okay. Getting people aligned on what's most important and then coming back at it through the key results. That's the part that takes a lot of time. You're saying, okay, we agree on this thing. What does it look like? How do we know when we get there? People have a lot of work to do. And making the time to do this is really hard to, I'm going to say, squeeze in. So if you don't prioritize it, you're not going to get there. And that's just the first part. Now you have to monitor that, okay? And Christina Watke will say, if you keep asking me about my progress, I'm not going to be able to show you my results. But so monthly monitoring, quarterly restatement, but you got to stay in tune with them and keep communicating about those.
Well, Tom, it's about time to wrap up, but I want to just get one last question in here. So if you were to give some guidance to a marketing team in just, let's say, three words, okay, what would you tell them to do to reach that goal you talked about earlier to be more efficient and effective?
In three words, I'm going to say trust your team.
That's the most important thing.
I think so. I think so. You could say empower your team, but get the most decisions you can. This is more than three words, but it started out with trust your team. Get the most of your decision-making done at the level where the knowledge exists, where the knowledge is practiced. So trust your team.
That's great. All right. Well, thank you, Tom, for sharing your stories and your wisdom with us.
Really appreciate the invitation.
Thanks for listening to our show today.